Hi there, this is James Swanick, and you're listening to the Swanick Podcast.
Hello again, I am James Swanick, and today we're talking about how to produce and create a community, whether it's with an online business or an offline business, or whether you're just trying to be a community creator in general, even if you don't have a business. Today we're talking to a fellow Australian, Kat Abianic, who is a serial community creator and a professional social media community manager. She's also a mindset enthusiast, and she helps mostly therapists, coaches, and creators have consistent five-figure months in their business. And she's also a boundaries champion. I'll get her to explain that in a little second. Kat, welcome to the show. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much, James. It's awesome to be on. Boundaries champion. That's the one. I didn't know they put that in there. That's funny.
Tell me about boundaries. What is boundaries?
Oh, boundaries. I love them. I don't know. I got into this a few years ago because we were really, when you do start to put yourself out there in any context, it doesn't matter if it's business or personal, whenever you start showing up in a new environment, I feel like it's the same recurring things that come up for everyone. And we kind of all have those same fears, you know, like fears of being seen, fears of people feeling that we're presenting ourselves in a way that we don't intend to. And I think boundaries fix a lot of that because it separates the this is me from that is you. And it helps us maybe not project so much of our stuff over there and let go of outcomes as well. So I find it a really valuable skill in community management because it's amazing, James. I'm sure you've come across this too, but you talk to these wildly successful, impressive, incredible humans and they still have, sometimes they've just got people ringing them all the time and they feel like they have to pick up and they can't say no and they feel obligated. And sometimes when the first step that I help someone with is learning how to set appropriate boundaries, it can change their entire lives, let alone their business. So that's why I say boundaries champion.
Yeah, so it's not actually like a, I was thinking like lawn bowls or a board game like Monopoly or Snakes and Ladders that I hadn't come across yet. But boundaries champion is all about setting boundaries, right, and keeping boundaries.
Yeah, keeping is the important part. I often find people say they've set a boundary, but they've set an expectation and they forget the enforcement part because the boundary isn't about the other person. It's about the action you're choosing to take and letting go of just letting go of your connection to the outcome or the reaction of the other person while mitigating it, obviously.
I want to ask another question on this just before we move on, but can you give us an example of how you set and enforce boundaries? I'm not sure whether enforce is the right word, but how do you set boundaries and then how do you ensure that they are, that they're met?
Okay, so a really common boundary is when a spouse changes their behavior because of the way they're showing up in their business that's new. So generally it's a time imposition. And what will happen is it impacts on the spouse in a position where there tends to be a little bit of codependence instead of interdependence, where they are reliant on the help and it's really supportive, but they're okay to function without it and they accept when they're not going to receive that support. So this is why a lot of people, like I love Alex Chaffin's podcast where he always talks about your spouse is the most important thing in your business a lot of the time. And it's so true. So when somebody, for example, their workload temporarily increases and they say to, when we're having those conversations and they say, I'm struggling a little bit because I've got all these duties. And I'm like, you know, I can't tell you what to say or do in your personal relationships, but here's what I've done before. When I'm doing a big launch, I would say to my partner, for example, I'd really like your support with this, this, and this. Can you please let me know if you're not able to provide it? Because I'm going to pay for somebody to come in and do these things while I do this launch or have this thing work out. And it'll be for this amount of time. And so it's kind of giving those options and just knowing, you know, if they don't give you a response, the boundary is that you pay someone to come in and do it anyway. Like you need the thing to happen regardless of what happens on their end. So you do it, you solve the problem. And a lot of the time, I mean, I had this conversation probably about a month ago with one of my clients, and the outcome was it actually fixed a lot of stuff that was coming up in her relationship, and their partner actually ended up being a lot better supported by the end of it than they would have been had she not launched and that rear its head in the first place, the yeah. dependence issue.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Like a lot of these things, everything comes down to communication, doesn't it? Crystal clear communication.
Yes. Every time. And sometimes we feel like it needs to be, we feel like our problem's so special and unique and like we're the only one that's ever had it and it feels so big. And when you step into a community and that community is really well framed as a place where you can share to a certain, you know, level and it's trusted and you start sharing your problem and you realize that you're sitting with 40 people who have the identical problem, sometimes that's all it takes to put it into perspective. And then you can see the solution, because a lot of the time we're already getting told the solution, but we just think our problem's too special for it to work.
Hi there, this is James Swanick and you're listening to the Swanick Podcast.
Tell us a little bit about you, where you're based, what you do, and how you came to be doing what it is that you do. Just share your story a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so I spent many years working at Australian Taxation Office. I had a team there, and I ended up working on their social media team as their Facebook channel expert. And by that stage, I had a very young son. Can't remember how Parker, how old he would have been when he started, but he was diagnosed with Down syndrome at birth. So, you know, I do like my communities. So when he was born, I started a play group, which is still thriving. I don't go to it very often. I don't show up too often. He's almost eight now. And they're dealing, like, they run it like a champion. There's so many families now. And that was probably the first community, I'd say. I've written about this before, but it was the first community where it wasn't an option to just leave. And I found that really interesting, because communities also can make you deal with your stuff. Because, you know, when you have a child with Down syndrome and you find out at birth, it's not an opt-in, opt-out, okay, well, I'm just going to raise my child as though he's typical. Because while that's inclusive, it's not really that inclusive if he never has any friends with Down syndrome. That's a bit weird. So I'm really well connected with other parents. In fact, you know, inside one of my coaching programs, our financial coach also has a child with Down syndrome. It comes with good and bad qualities, but I think people often go their whole lives without ever having community. And not true community where there's no opt-out button. And once you get that, I think it can bring up a lot of stuff. And it's sometimes the first time people experience that unconditional support where maybe you aren't showing up as hard as you should, but people still have your back. And often I find that's why people keep school friends around for so long, or maybe friend circles that aren't that suitable, and they may not help them move forward, but they do have your back in some way. So, yeah, I had Parker. I was working at Australian Taxation Office, and I ended up leaving to work for an influencer called Constance Hall, who not many men have heard of, but she was the best-selling author in Australia in 2016. She had a book called Like a Queen. So I was her her social media director, actually, and her community manager before that. I worked the two jobs for a little while. And then I kind of struck out on my own and started my own business, supporting people to grow their own online communities. And just kind of transfer their offline skills online. I think that's really important, is never underestimating just the plethora of existing skills people already have. I think sometimes they feel a bit silly when they come online and they don't know how to set up a Facebook group or do really simple things, yet they have, you know, they've written a thesis, and they're over here not trying to they're trying to fumble around a live stream button. But yeah, once you do pick up those little things and let your influence shine, there's such a space for everybody on the internet.
Yeah, so a lot of business owners, you know, they're helping people, they're coaching people, but there's no community group, there's no community feel. So
yeah,
what are some of the common mistakes you see, and then how do you combat those mistakes? Like what would you suggest someone does instead?
Yeah, I think some of the most common mistakes are, one of the most common is teaching, kind of leading with your toolkit. I see a lot of, think of an industry for me and I'll tell you what they do wrong. let's say business coaches. Let's pick on one of our own. So I see business coaches out there and they'll be saying, the reason you're not succeeding in your business is because you have a poor mindset around this issue. So people are reading these posts and they're like, I don't have a poor mindset. I've got a great mindset. The truth is, around that issue, they might have had a poor mindset, but they don't know because they're pre-belief. They really haven't kind of gotten to the point where they recognize that needs to be fixed. So sometimes when you know too much, you share too much. So the biggest mistake people have is not taking it back to the basics and speaking people's actual pain points back at them. Like, I know we've all heard it, you know, sell people what they want and give them what they need. But I think people see that as being unethical because they don't understand how to do that ethically. And that's really important. So, you know, when I mean, in one of my communities, I just teach people how to grow a Facebook group to 10,000 members. My free community, I just help them get to 500 because that's where they're at, right? And they want leads. Now, are they going to get a huge amount of leads from a Facebook group of 500 people? A lot of the time, yes, because it's their friends they're putting in there that they've already got influence with. But most of the time, no, they're not. But that is how they're going to start the community that attracts people, that helps them grow their online profile and presence. So I lead with that and I say, would you like to get leads online, dropping in your inbox just by setting up a Facebook group? And they're like, oh, that's exactly what I want. No, they're not going to hit join on the group and wake up in the morning and leads are hitting their inbox. But if they show up and do the free modules, that's what they'll get. And it helps them start transferring their influence online. Some people see that as being icky. So they'll be like, you can't say that. You need to tell them that it's hard work and take them through the whole steps and framework. But if I could get everyone listening to this podcast to take away one thing, James, I think it would be, when you're talking about your topic of expertise, just sit next to them like you're in the room, hold their hand and just give them that one next step they need to just get to the next place, and talk that to death in really simple language that shows that you're an expert. And then once they've all acknowledged they're there, or some have, then you just take them to the next place in really simple language. The sign of an expert is being able to explain something in only a few sentences or words, and the listener understands conceptually what to do next.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. I have one of my businesses, I help people quit drinking. I've been doing that now since 2015, helped about 20,000 people reduce or quit alcohol.
Amazing. I love that. I saw it. I love it. Everything you stand for. I also am a non-drinker. So yeah, fantastic what you do.
Thank you. Appreciate that very much.
Hi there, this is James Swanick and you're listening to the Swanick Podcast.
It's a successful business. I help lots of people and we help lots of people. It's great. We get huge benefits for people. One of the things I found challenging in my business has been trying to encourage people to join a Facebook group that is about quitting drinking, because a lot of people have a lot of shame or embarrassment. There's a lot of stigma around their drinking. And so trying to get people to hit like on a Facebook group that helps, you know, a free group that helps people to quit drinking has been challenging. What's been even more challenging is getting the people who are in that group to engage once they're in that. And certainly a lot of the folks who end up becoming clients of mine share with me that they didn't want to be in the Facebook group or they didn't want to comment in the Facebook group because they're worried that it'll get out and that people will know that they, you know, this thing that they're pretty much for the most part trying to keep secret from husband or wife or friends or family or bosses or staff or whatever.
Yeah.
So how might you approach that to try and encourage, to try and create a community of people who might, and you know, so, who are engaged? That's the other thing, like an engaged community, not just a community, but an engaged community. How might you foster that around a topic where people are kind of scared or worried about revealing themselves?
Yeah, look, I love this so much because it's such a perfect example of you have such a specific tool set that you support people with, and it's so obvious. And you're like so many businesses where people have to reach their pain threshold to come and approach you. So what I find, and I know a lot of people will be relating as you said that, and they're like, that's like me with mine. I'm selling the tools, but then I can't make the community. So it's taking it a couple of steps back and seeing what they all have in common. And then, so if you take it back a few steps, do you find you work more with more men or women?
It's about 55, 45 women to men. Cool. And most of the ones, my demographic are mostly over 40s or over 35s, but people in 40s, 50s and 60s, I don't want to say I ignore people in their 20s or 30s, but certainly no people in their 20s don't really care as much about not drinking as they do in their late 30s and early 40s, starting to get into middle age of life.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So when you take it back a couple of points and you find the entire demographic, something funny that happens is they don't always need to want to quit drinking yet. It might even be around the if they all have a community in common that they tend to be in, and then growing that in some way, but linking it in by regularly running. I always tell people to run a challenge. So what challenge can you run to get someone a really quick win? So if I was to ask you that, I would say, so when people are starting to quit, and I can relate because I used to have a mummy wine at night, and for me it was weight. I was like, oh, geez, I put on like 5 or 6 kilos. I could go on a diet, but also I drank like 3 bottles of wine this month. So if I just stopped drinking wine, there's my calories. And that's actually what made me quit. It wasn't the weight, but it was realizing that it was affecting my gut health. I was experiencing inflammation. I had a fuzzy brain, which I thought was wine, but it was inflammation in my body. I started to go alkaline. And that's when I really got into natural health and wellness. I went 100% low tox. So maybe like coming a couple of steps back and looking at like, what does a low tox entrepreneur look like? What does like a 5-day challenge, like, you know, how could you frame up a challenge for people who are drinking and they haven't built the belief yet that they need to quit, but they've got the external knowledge? So I always talk about morals versus ethics. Morals is what you personally believe in to be your truth, and that's your highest values. You don't always logically agree with your morals, but they're deep down, and that's what shows up in your everyday behavior. I don't know if you've ever done John DeMartini's values quiz on his website, but it's eye-opening. And then when you look at ethics, it's the opinion of the collective, it's the external. So when we hear ourselves saying I must, I need to, I should, that's instead of us sitting in, you know, Freud talks about id, instead of sitting in that id, we're sitting in superego, which is just what everyone else is telling us to do. It's ethically what people around us want. So even bringing someone into this community that's healthy and reflects more with their true values, because at the core of it, everyone wants community. They want love. They want connection. By bringing them into this community, you're just doing them such a favor by getting them back in line with their morals and away from external ethics, especially in Australia where there's so much of this normalized. It's just horrific. So even doing like a reduce inflammation and bringing people across who might be biohacking or they might be into natural wellness and that sort of thing, and doing a, you know, 5-day reduce inflammation in the body. And it might be a side, it might be just one of the side steps that you don't drink for the 30 days or the whichever it is. So that's kind of how I would consider approaching it, working back as far as you could to where people are just pre-belief. They're ready to make the choice, but they're not sure how. And then you just hand them the first step.
So it wouldn't be like a quit drinking support group community. It would be a improve your life support group. And within that, it might be, you know, you might then talk about, hey, if you'd like to quit alcohol, go here. Or it could be like an over 40s health and support group, or, something like that.
Oh my gosh. Like biohacking for 40 plus entrepreneurs. Honestly, like you get women in there, 35 to 44 year old women spend the most money on the internet. They want to biohack. They just don't know how because it's so massive. It's so male focused, you know, like hacking and gut health and buy the bulletproof. And they're just like, I just want to be low tox and not drink wine all the time. And then you've got men over there kind of doing the same thing going, oh, is this for me? I'm not sure. But man, I'm in. I just turned 36 on Sunday. Count me in. Send me the link.
biohacking for 40 plus doesn't quite seem like, I always think that people have a natural aversion to the word biohacking.
Yeah, something around that. Like, I agree for the reasons I just spelled out, because I feel like it is quite masculine. But you know, like the whole low tox or reducing inflammation, I know there's a lot of generic terms in there, but I also think people focus very much on what to get across in their group name, forgetting you can keep it a little bit more basic, and that helps too. But I can tell you about how I started one of my communities, which is probably one of my biggest ones, and it was because I was reading Quora. Do you ever go on Quora?
Yeah. I don't do it regularly, but I've been on it, yes. Yep.
Cool. So Elon Musk's ex-wife is quite prolific on Quora. I had no idea till I saw this post. And it was somebody who'd said, I know how to become a millionaire. You just work hard and, you know, get lucky from working hard. But how do you become a billionaire? That's not luck. There's not, you know, a lot of them. And Elon Musk's ex-wife came along and she wrote, and this is nowhere near word for word, but it's the most beautiful post you could read. It went crazy viral, which is how I came across it. And she said, you need to find one thing that you're truly passionate about. And you need to become the best in the world at that one thing. And you just focus on it and dedicate your life to it until you're it. You're the subject matter expert. And once you've done that, you need to find your next best passion. If you don't have one, go and make it happen. Develop a passion, like emotionally anchor the thing, create it, and then become the best in the world at that thing. And then to become a billionaire, you build a bridge and you link the two.
Hi there, this is James Swanick and you're listening to the Swanick Podcast.
Yeah. It makes sense with Elon Musk because he loved space travel, didn't he, when he was a kid growing up, and he loved all of that kind of that kind of stuff. And then he created SpaceX, didn't he, which is his second company. So he created, Tesla. He's got $2 billion brands or you know, companies running simultaneously. Plus he was, you know, he came in with PayPal. So, owns SpaceX because when he was a kid growing up in South Africa, he used to dream of going into space, and, you know, Neil Armstrong were his heroes and all those NASA astronauts were his heroes. And then later on in life, he kind of merged tech because he became, you know, he loved tech. He was a bit of a tech nerd by his own admission. So he merged his geekiness for tech with his passion for space to create SpaceX, which now, you know, has government contracts with NASA and that they're now exploring missions to populate Mars, hopefully within his lifetime. So yeah, that makes sense. Passion, mixing two passions together
So that's my question then. What's your other great love? What's the other thing that you're passionate about?
Well, I love, sports. I love my Tottenham Hotspur Premier League English soccer club. I love playing music, piano and guitar, and I love traveling. I love international travel. So I'm trying to see if I can find something that can blend those two things together, as well as helping people to quit drinking.
Yeah. Mm. I love that. I'm going to think more on that. And that's the other thing. Like, it's not something you ever just need to decide and roll with. Like, I actually tested a few online communities first. Mm-hmm. And I also did a little bit of market research. So I was like, if I were to create a community that supported you with blah, blah, and blah, would you be interested? Just hit reply to this email and let me know. And then when I hit a winner, that was the community I created. So I think I sent maybe two or three of those. One I just got an overwhelming response to, and I went, that's the winner. So if you've already got your demographic sitting on a list, drop them. And if I were to create this for you, would you be interested? Let me know and I'll see what I can do. Once you start kind of voicing it out loud, it's either just going to, the funny thing about communities is it's like, I don't know, have you read Big Magic?
I haven't.
Okay, a beautiful book by Elizabeth Gilbert, and a lot of people call it the best business book of all time because it's got nothing to do with business. She talks about ideas, and it's like how they just roll around the universe waiting for someone to pick them up. She's got examples of all the times that it's happened. And sometimes these ideas, you know, those ideas that come to you when, you know, you're in theta state in the shower and then you forget them, and a year later they come back up and you do it and it's just this instant winner and you're like, why didn't I do it? Like the time wasn't right. Yeah, like it's just like these ideas are floating around the universe waiting for you to pick them up and just test and try it out and see if that idea is ready to come into the world yet. So I don't know, I'm a little bit woo-woo, and I do think a lot of this is about, you know, I think entrepreneurs have this ability to pick up more of those ideas and play with them. And I think there's a lot of focus on picking a winner when sometimes it's just about picking a horse and riding it and seeing what comes of it. And when we do hit that winner, we have the skills and tools to just make it go. Because by the time I found that perfect positioning for me, I got that Facebook group to 10,000 in less than 8 weeks. I think it was about 6 weeks and it hit 10K.
Wow. And that's an engaged community. It's amazing.
Oh, the engagement was higher than the member count. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And a lot of business owners in particular don't quite realize yet just the power that you can get from a super engaged group of people. Like, you know, a lot of people spend money on funnels and paid advertising and conversion rates. But when you actually have an active community who are conversing and engaging with one another, then when you actually roll out products, they're usually the first ones to just go, yes, I'll have that. Yep. They're already engaged with you enough. They trust, know, and like you. They trust, know, and like the group. And, you know, later on, as you roll out products that you want to test, you can always test them with that group as well.
Communities are so honest with us as well. You know, like they'll tell you when something's working and when it's not working, but they're also so forgiving. And that's a beautiful thing because you end up developing such an amazing product. And I can tell Swanee's had a community, you know, and you had people around you that you asked for so much feedback because, like, the quality of the product. I mean, I was chatting to somebody randomly on Instagram who lives in Las Vegas, a friend of mine, Lewis, and he was like, check these out, just bought the new Swanee's. And I'm like, hey, Swanee's, that's so crazy. I'm doing this thing. He's like, oh my God, Swanee's, that's so cool. And I wish I'd had my affiliate code in my pocket because he just bought them. But like just for people to get to raving fan level, he'd never owned them before. Mm-hmm. And that was based on the feedback of like the three or four other people I'm guessing around him that maybe had a pair or like feedback he'd had from other people that own Swanee's. So it's not just about selling the product. It's about when you can get this group of people around you that are just your brand advocates and forgiving and helpful, and they're just there for you. It helps you with your positioning. And when you know your positioning, like you guys have done, you've nailed your positioning. You know exactly who buys your product. that makes your paid traffic so much more effective, because I see these people that are so skilled and so incredible, and you watch them on stage, or you go through their course. I'm working with a speech therapist at the moment. She's the most incredible speech therapist I've ever met in my life. She's so effective. I've seen the work she's done. But she doesn't have anywhere that you can buy her course online. You've got to send off an email and fill out an enrollment form and then get it back and do a bank transfer. And I don't have other people I can talk to. And I did all this based on one woman, a friend of mine, saying, you need to speak to this woman. And I spoke to her and I realized, but that's not, she can't scale that, you know, unless she's charging a lot of money for her speech therapy course designed specifically for parents and schools. However, once her online community's up and running, I'll be recommending her to every special needs parent on the planet, and I don't have to do anything anymore. I just drop them in a group or I send them an Instagram link. So this is where backing yourself and just creating something, regardless of your positioning, where it is as it stands, is so valuable, because your customers will do the talking for you. So when you've already got influence or an incredible product offline, don't be scared to just show up and start with something, because your existing community that you can't see, they'll actually start doing a little bit of the work for you. They're okay with you showing up imperfectly for them.
Yeah, I love that. Kat Abianic, where can we find more about you? If someone here is listening and they want to build a community, or they want some help polishing their existing community, where can they find and get in contact with you?
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for that. So I've actually set up a link for you. So I have a 37-module course that will help somebody build a community and grow up to their first 500 members. So if you go to katabianic.com/swannies, you just click the link and it'll let you enroll for free, and you can work through. And even if you don't end up starting a group, it'll show you a whole lot about how you're currently positioned. It'll just kind of help you refine a lot of what you're already doing online.
Yeah, wonderful. I love that. That's Kat Abianic. That's katabianac.com/swannies. Kat, thank you so much for your time and your guidance. This was wonderful food for thought on communities, and inspiring me to take a bit of action on a couple of little things that I've got coming up. So thank you for that.
And, I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's super exciting. Can't wait to share it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Swanick podcast. If you liked what you heard, give us a subscribe. And while you're at it, forward it to a friend you think would benefit from hearing it too. You can find us on social media or at shopswanick.com.